That tune right there, Pick Piece, a theme of Unreal Bluegrass throughout each program. Written, recorded, produced, every note played is from my guest today, Jeremy Garrett. Jeremy has a new album entitled Wanderer's Compass. It's on Organic Label, which is a label that he uses often. And we're going to talk to Jeremy about how this album came about and any other news about the String Dusters. You probably know Jeremy is a regular founding member of the incredibly fabulous, infamous String Dusters. They got a lot going on, too, just nominated for a Grammy. So this is going to be Jeremy's second or third, maybe fourth solo album. So let's get right into it with Won't You Remember My Name, and then we'll talk to Jeremy Garrett about all the cool things that go on in his head and come out through his music. Thanks so much for tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass. For the listeners of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard Won't You Remember My Name, brand new song from Jeremy Garrett's Wanderer's Compass. And I'm real happy to have Jeremy Garrett back again as a guest on Unreal Bluegrass. How are you, Jeremy?
Hey, I'm doing great. How about you, Steve?
I'm doing good. I wanted to connect with you earlier. We had sometimes possibilities of actually meeting in real time. It didn't work out for me, but I'm glad to have a chance to talk to you about this Wanderer's Compass, which is on the Organic Records. We'll talk about how you can get it, how people can get it. But this is a great collection of, I know maybe more than a lot of people know about Jeremy and his musical tastes because he's been on so many times. He's talked about his solo records. I know Circles, something that we've chatted about, the RV Sessions. I think there's at least one or two versions of that, in addition to the infamous String Dusters, which is something that we talk about and which Jeremy is a major, major component of that band. But so this album, then, is such a great collection. You have a great description of what it is that you're doing. But before we get specific into your intent behind this album, talk a little bit about the song we just played for the audience, Won't You Remember My Name, and then we'll come back and bounce around, just kind of get a feel of what you're up to on this one.
Right on. Well, you know, Won't You Remember My Name was a song that I co-wrote with my frequent writing buddy, John Weisberger. And, you know, we've written a bunch of songs by now, and this was just kind of one that captured a vibe I was having one day. I was thinking back to when I was younger. I had these rodeo friends, and some of these guys used to ride bulls. And I used to just think about how crazy that is, but also, too, how dedicated you have to be in that world and make it, you know, any kind of success at all. And, you know, you just got to go for it all the way. And that's kind of the whole point, is also kind of to be remembered in that world, to be legendary. You kind of really have to throw down in that lifestyle, you know, and go all out. And that's kind of what that song is about. It's just about a song about like a, you know, it's kind of like an old school fight song. You know, it's like a song to kind of get you going and get you psyched up.
You better be ready if you're a rodeo clown.
That's right.
You better be on your game all the time.
Yeah, and those guys are tough, and you got to be tough to be in that world. And so that's kind of what the vibe of the song is about.
Yeah. There's so many great tunes on here. You borrow from so many different sources of music, and they're just things that you like. I don't think for a second that Jeremy Garrett is going out trying to find influences to say, I'm taking this in. You just like a lot of different kinds of music. We may have talked about it before, but let the listener know a little bit about Jeremy Garrett. They may know you more immediately with the String Dusters, which I think are a very progressive sounding, amazing band, but you have a little bit maybe different influence than the rest of those guys.
Well, sure, you know, I mean, we're all a product of our environment when it comes to music in that regard. You know, we take in what we can, and somebody of my generation is pretty lucky these days to have so many different places in which to find new music and that type of thing. You know, growing up, it was, for me, I was very steeped in traditional bluegrass and gospel music. And so learning a lot about how, you know, I guess some of the basics of how that works, like singing in the church and that kind of thing. And then, you know, kind of figuring out how all the parts work. And then later, you know, discovering, oh, man, at the same time, Flat and Scruggs, I really also like Guns N' Roses and Flash playing electric guitar. And, you know, at the same time, I was also into, like, Dr. Dre and stuff. So, you know, I've been into a lot of different things, and I just kind of let those things wash over me. And luckily, I had parents that were supportive of that, and they just kind of let me listen to whatever it was I wanted to. And when I was old enough to drive, there was this place down the road from me called the Listening Center. This was before they had such things as Spotify and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And what you do is you go down to this place, and the Listening Center had all these CDs you could pull out and check out, and you put them under a little barcode, and it'd scan them and play them in the headphones for you so you could listen to whatever it was before you purchased the record. And that's kind of where I discovered a lot of more of the new age stuff that I was into. But, you know, I've always been a sucker for pop music from an early age. I'm a huge Michael Jackson fan, and just, you know, just kind of, I like it all, you know, as long as it's done well and tastefully and at a high level.
That's the key. If it's done well, and if you're a musician and play at the caliber that you do, Jerry, I'm not blowing smoke, but if you play at that level and you play in a band with people who are equally at that level, I would think that you appreciate everything that's done well.
That's it, man. You know? I mean, you can't help but respect other kind of music, because you know how hard it is just to play one kind of music, you know, and as a musician, and a lot of people just go their whole lives just kind of sticking with one genre. But for me, I just kind of needed to let some of these other influences out. I've been sort of steeped and staying within a vein of bluegrass, and I plan to even go more focused to bluegrass here on my next record. But I just needed one that kind of needed to, like, spread out a little bit and just kind of share with everybody what, you know, kind of vibe I really have inside of me, you know, when it comes to the different kind of music that I can play and hear and share with people.
A lot of soul. There's a lot of soul in your voice and almost any vocal that I hear you, whether it's on your solo albums or with the Dusters. You have a very soulful sound.
Well, thanks, man. You know, it's just a part of who I am. You know, I definitely listen to a lot of blues, and you know, my dad was a bluegrass musician, but my mom loved some of these soul singers, you know, and I grew up listening to gospel and, you know, soul singers like Terrence Trent D'Arby and, of course, Michael Jackson and, you know, even Jimi Hendrix and that sort of thing. So couldn't help but to have, you know, those things and those sounds influence what I do.
They have to. I mean, because the level of their musicianship, whether just in the writing of the song or the performance, it has to appeal to somebody like you. And I know the level that you experiment with musically all the time, but those things have to inform you as to what kind of sounds now. Will Jeremy Garrett sound just like Jay Utall? I mean, we talked about this off the air, but no. But your very first song, I happen to remember this song, Footprints, that you do on the album, because I explained to you off the air why I was looking for that kind of sound. But you borrow from some interesting world sounds, and not just pop or hip hop or bluegrass or rock and soul. That's an amazing. I love that tune. I love Nevermind. It's kind of like you bookended. The 10th cut is Nevermind. I wouldn't call it world music. I don't have to call it anything. It's just good music. But those two influences on this album to me are just an indication of where you're going and what you're getting music influences from.
Well, you know, just like other styles of music, you know, I definitely love other, like, stylings across the world, and I've tried to incorporate some of that stuff into what I do, you know, especially some of the Middle Eastern sounds on that particular record,
right,
The Wanderer's Compass. I did a lot of incorporating of Middle Eastern-type music and the sounds and stuff that I was hearing in that music. And, of course, I listen to a lot of Indian music and world music, and Jay Utal is sort of that yoga music kind of vein,
yeah,
you know, and even lately I've been getting into Turkish music and some of the things that go on in that world, and it's just fascinating to me to explore some of these other things. And you come to find out, you know, as you train as a musician, and I don't know, you just kind of keep plugging away and you follow the things that interest you. But it's interesting to me, at the end of the day, the stuff that I learned that I love that Ralph Stanley does, I find similarities in the fiddle stylings of El Supermanium, you know, or somebody like that who can sing or play with these wailing. It's not that far to me from like a Ralph Stanley sound,
no,
you know, in my ears.
It isn't.
And I know a lot of people would probably disagree with that, but that's just kind of how my ears hear it, you know.
Look.
And it's so fascinating to me how in reality, music is an international language in that way.
Let me tell you something, and this was an odd occurrence, but it occurs to me as you're saying this. So a year or two ago, I had Christian McBride on Unreal Bluegrass because I'd seen him on a video from out in Telluride. So here's Christian McBride, to me, if not one of the greatest jazz musicians, the greatest living innovator of jazz bass playing. And he's on stage with Sam and Bela. And I thought, wait a minute. I was a big fan of Christian McBride's jazz. I thought, there's an opportunity to talk to Christian McBride about bluegrass. And his people were up for it. I had him on the show. And so what you're talking about, these influences that are not that different than Stanley, Ralph Stanley or the Stanley brothers. So I get to the question is why were you on stage with Sam Bush and Bela Fleck out in Telluride playing bluegrass? He said, Ray Brown. feels like I'm name dropping, but I have to tell a story. His mentor and second father was Ray Brown. They're both from Philadelphia. And Ray Brown is one of the all-time greats. Jazz bass players, was everywhere, played everything. And Ray Brown told me, this is Christian saying it, Christian McBride saying, Ray Brown told me, if you really want to get in that groove, listen to the Stanley Brothers.
Yep.
And it never occurred to me, but so what you're saying is kind of similar, is that there's this connection. So Christian McBride, and here's this guy from Philly doing this incredible jazz, but his first, Ray Brown's like, do this, go back and listen to this and absorb all this from the Stanley Brothers, and you'll get that groove that you're trying to find. I thought, wow, there
you go.
You
know, some of that, those are ancient tones, you know. Those things come from way back in our ancestry. And, you know, at some point, like, you know, we can go back really, really far, and we all kind of come from a similar place, apparently, you know.
Yeah.
So it's not unbelievable to me that these stylings could have similarities all over the world. And even if you look at, you know, like the violin in particular, you know, how the British sort of like did indeed conquer most of the whole world, you know, at one time, and they brought the violin with them everywhere they went. And now you find that in cultural, like deep culturally embedded into some of the music, like Indian music, they've made it their own. And so, you know, it's kind of interesting how that all works out.
To me, you're hitting on exactly. And if you're just tuning in, I'm talking to Jeremy Garrett. Our jumping off point, I would say, would be his most recent Wanderer's Compass on Organic, which is a nice collection of a lot of tunes, which we're trying to get into and explain a little bit. But to me, there's that common core. You can go back to it, and you're going to find that rock that allows you to then jump off from all kinds of other progressive or not. Maybe you stay there. Progressive doesn't mean better in my mind. Progressive just means different. So when I say the word that, if I would mention that the String Dusters are progressive bluegrass, it doesn't mean that they're better than anything else. It just means it's a different style. But it's, you know, I mean, you know,
I had an old guy tell me one time, my neighbor, I was trying to tell him what kind of music I played, and I said, progressive bluegrass, and he goes, I don't like anything progressive. So I don't know if that's a good term, but it helps to kind of, I guess, explain where it comes from.
And it doesn't mean better. It doesn't mean better. I think people, I shouldn't be opinionating so much, but I think people think if you were to tell them I play progressive, they think, well, you think you're making it better. That's not the thing. It's just a different approach to what they all really value. Now, some people don't like it. Some people do. That's okay. But progressive doesn't have a bad meaning at all in my mind.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, man. That's a good question, actually. What does that even mean, progressive? And it is a thing. And it's a description we do use. But maybe, I don't know. It probably has to do with more of the more commercially sounding vibe, or maybe, you know, just kind of utilizing some of the abilities that you have nowadays that people didn't used to have, that people have sort of been able to learn and hone in on these instruments. You know, what I try to do is just make sure the integrity of music, especially where I come from, you know, bluegrass oriented, I try to keep all that alive in the music that I'm playing.
Yeah, and you do, and which leads us directly to the fourth cut on the album, Mule Skinner Blues.
Oh, right on. Yeah.
You know, we're talking about all these other influences in world and hip hop, but there, right in smack dab middle of the album, you have Jeremy Garrett's version of Mule Skinner Blues, which is, yes, Mule Skinner Blues, but it's also Jeremy Garrett.
Well, you know, I tried to make that one my own, too. I'm a huge Bill Monroe fan. I've been listening to him for, you know, many, many years. One of the first, like, probably people I ever heard sing. And so to get a chance to do a cover like that, but kind of make it my own, you know, and bring it into this more, I don't know, this looping world, progressive, as you say, kind of sound, and see what I can do with that. But kind of keep the essence of the song alive.
I do.
That one I just wanted to make real simple. You know, I just wanted to have a simple fiddle loop where I layered up. I think I layered up three different fiddle loops and then sing over the top of that and just kind of, you know, take solos in the spaces. And it was just a lot of fun to try to figure out, well, how can I do this just fiddle and voice? Would that be possible? And bringing in the looper sort of helped bring that all together. But I just kind of love how the track turned out.
It's great. You've really mastered looping and the whole idea of electronic influences. I don't mean sounding, although in Magic we're going to talk about in a minute, there's definitely a synthesizer sound that pops in. But you've definitely mastered looping, and can you explain that? I know we've talked about this before with you and other people, but for listeners, yeah. When you say looping, what are you doing?
Well, I'm using a piece of machinery that can capture the sound of what it is that I'm doing, and I can layer up anything that I want, basically, with this looping machine. I can put a part of a song in there, I can put the verses or the choruses, or I can do both, and play over the top of that once the track is laid down. It's just a way. A lot of people call it live looping, and that's what I do. I don't do any canned thing where it's already recorded when I come to the show. I do all the stuff live in the show. And so whenever I set up a live loop, what that means is I'm just kind of setting up a track of some kind for what it is I'm about to do. And, you know, it takes a lot of practice, man. I spent a ton of time in my basement trying to figure out how to do that and do it smoothly. You know, I think you could probably be pretty gimmicky with a looper, and I wanted to be really, you know, sort of conscious and careful about that so that that wasn't happening. I wanted to utilize the looper as like it was its own instrument, like I was just playing fiddle or mandolin or the looper, you know, and just using it as an important piece of my song. And I'll try in a show to bring it in and bring it out. I won't use it on every song, or I might use it for a little while on a song and then take it out and go back to live playing. You know, it's just a way for me to, especially a fiddle player, you know, which is my main instrument. I play guitar and mandolin as well, so it's easy to sort of loop up a guitar part so I have a bed to play fiddle over or sing over and that kind of thing.
And,
that's what I've done, and it's taken definitely many, you know, years now to get to the point where I feel like I'm confident and smooth with it. But I've tried to, you know, utilize it the best I can, not be too gimmicky, which I think would be pretty easy to do with something like that. But I try to make it real music, you know.
If you're watching Jeremy do this, and this is my description, Jeremy, correct me if I'm wrong. If you're seeing Jeremy perform, let's do a solo show, or in essence a solo show, and you see him, he'll play a little riff on something, and then he'll push something on the these things are usually on the floor because I think it's more because you can't really use your hands. So you record a little strip, and then you'll click that, and then you allow it to run, and then you record another part that runs with it. And then that's how you layer on. If people are watching you, they're wondering what you're doing with your foot. That's what he means when he talks about looping in layers of sound. That's what I've always said. Danny Barnes does that all the time on banjo.
It's almost like you would have a recording studio at your show.
That's right.
You know, you're just like recording any part that it is that you want to play to.
Yep.
And sometimes that can just be, you know, a soundscape for me. It's not necessarily a rhythm. Or a
bed. As you say, it's a bed. It's a bed for what you're going to play on top of it.
Yeah, yep.
I understand that. That leads us very well, I think, to Magic, a tune that you mentioned. I want you to do an intro to Magic. We're going to play that, and I'll come back and talk to you about John Stickley and some other things that we're working our way through this album. The album is Wanderer's Compass by Jeremy Garrett. Let me add this also, and I do to every program. You don't hear it all the time, but the beginning of the segment of Unreal Bluegrass that contains an interview of an artist such as this one always starts with a composition by Jeremy Garrett entitled Pick Piece. That's my bed for starting this portion of the program. And I'd ask you to put that together because I felt like you understood it's not a particularly deep message. It has several different meanings, but just so people wonder, I always try to introduce Jeremy Garrett, Pick Piece, and then we introduce this. But just so you know, as we're going to let Jeremy introduce Magic, that's Jeremy. That's recording all the pieces. That's writing everything and putting it together and making it available for Unreal Bluegrass, for which I appreciate greatly.
Well, I really love the you know, the assignment, I guess you could say, and the opportunity to do something like that. I've done a few of those types of things in the past, and it's always fun to try to create music for a purpose, you know, instead of just letting it guide you, which is what happens to me most of the time. Is I'll just, you know, a tune will hit my head or some lyrics or a vibe or something, and that's how I start writing. But it's kind of cool to approach it from a different angle when somebody says, hey, I need a piece of music for this.
That's right.
And you get a different focus, you know, and it's definitely a lot of fun.
Yeah, so that credit being given, do a quick intro to Magic, and then I'm going to come back and talk to you some more about Wanderer's Compass, and then I'll let you go.
Yeah, Magic is, you know, one of those songs. It's a Coldplay cover, and, you know, a lot of people know that, and they recognize the tune, and they're like, oh, yeah, this is awesome. And a lot of people are like, oh, I didn't have any idea it was a Coldplay cover. And I love it when that happens because, you know, I can do a really cool song that is, you know, fun and people get and will recognize, but I try to make it my own, you know, and this is one of those songs. I also, you know, learned how to use, you know, new recording software on that song, and basically from start to finish, you know, I built that track with all the vibes and the grooves and the sounds, and it took me about 5 weeks to build that track, but I did it from start recording all the way to mastering that track, and learned about the whole process along the way. So it was like, you know, one of those pivotal pieces for me, I guess.
All right, that's it. We're going to play Magic. We're going to come back and talk to Jeremy some more. We're going to end around, by the way, Jeremy, with the last cut, Nevermind, because I wanted to talk to you about that. So let's go ahead and play Magic. I'm going to come back and talk to you about John Stickley, touch on a few other things, and we're going to leave with an introduction to Nevermind. So this is Magic from Jeremy Garrett's brand new album. Well, it's new in August, Wanderer's Compass on Organic. So let's give it a listen. All right, there you have it, Magic. I think you described it very well, Jeremy. So it's another sampling of influences. I don't mean sampling of music bits, but sampling of influences, which is so dominant. And everything that you talk about, everything that you play, has all these other things that inform you about how you want to express your feelings. I'm Not the Enemy. That's the tune, I think, with John Stickley. Let's talk about that a little bit. Then we'll bounce around a little bit, and I'll have you introduce Nevermind. So I'm not the Enemy.
Well, I'm Not the Enemy is the song that I wrote with a guy named John Pinnell out of Nashville. And, you know, just a song, I think we wrote that song about Harley Allen. It was a friend of John's. Mm-hmm. And Harley was known to be sort of a grouchy dude. I didn't really know him personally, but he was just one of those kind of guys that kind of came off as maybe sort of a grouchy person or whatever. But down deep, you know, he had a big heart and that kind of thing. And so John was trying to capture the essence of that in the lyrics of, you know, how you could be friends with somebody, but they can kind of treat you sometimes like you're not their friend. You have to remind them, hey, don't forget you, I'm your friend, you know. And so that's what I'm Not the Enemy is all about. And it's just a slanted bluegrass tune that I've had around in my back pocket for a while. And I always wanted to record it, and I've done it a bunch, you know, by myself as like singer-songwriter style on my shows, and I'll play guitar. But I thought to myself, you know, I went down to record this thing, and I found out John Stickley was going to be in the studio at the same time. And I thought, man, how easy would it be for him just to lay that guitar down, and he'd probably crush it. And sure enough, he did. And so that was fun. We just went in there, the two of us, and we recorded that track absolutely live. There's no overdubs or anything on there.
It's very live. There's a little bit of talking before you start. There's a little bit as you're ending it up. So that's a live recording, which I wanted to point that out. You just did, but it's a live as it happens.
Yeah, it's pretty fun to do it like that. You know, John, he had never heard the song before, so he had that energy of real fresh, and it's super intense to kind of go into the studio like that with somebody and lay down a track live. You know, it's like, you know, the recording button's on, everything counts, and the pressure is on. But also, you know, I was trying to make it sort of I didn't want a lot of pressure on the session per se, but it just kind of, you can't help but bring that energy to it when you're doing something like that. And we just went in there and did it, I think, in two takes. You know, we had the track that we wanted, and it just came off really well. And John's such a great musician.
It's a blast. Listen, okay, we've talked about John Stickley, which gives me the opportunity to mention some of the other performers. Jeremy's on this album one. Fiddle, guitar, mandolin, vocals, all sorts of programming, which has to do with that looping effect that we're talking about, I think, in a more maybe more elevated level. Jason Hahn, I don't know Jason, percussion on tracks 1 and 7. Tell me about him.
Jason Hahn is a percussionist for the String Cheese Incident.
Oh, sure.
And we've known those guys for a long time. They're kind of like big brothers to us, you know, as a band. And they've been real gracious to us over the years, you know, in different configurations, inviting us to play with them and such. And I just got to know Jason a little bit, and I knew how great he was. And I was programming some beats on this record, but I thought it'd be really cool to have some actual live percussion, especially on kind of some of the more Middle Eastern sounding vibes. And so he just nailed that stuff for sure.
And then Scott Barnett is listed as programming on tracks 2 and 10. Now, fold that into what you've told us already about some of the work that you did on this. So what was Scott Barnett doing for you on tracks 2 and 10?
Yeah, so Scott is a world-class engineer for Organic Records, and I've gotten the opportunity to record with him a few times now, and it just, he's blown me away since the first time I got to sit with him and I recorded parts of this record early on with him, and just kind of always loved his attitude and his expertise, you know, was something that I couldn't necessarily bring to the table when it comes to some of the recording things. And I did some of the beat programming, but it was, you know, basic for me because I'm just kind of learning. But he did some of the more complicated tunes, and so I was able to kind of lean on him and that kind of thing. And what you're doing is when you're programming beats, you're kind of sampling a sound of a drum that you like, you know, a beat, and then you just kind of put it in succession and just kind of make a loop out of it. And with recording tools, you can do all that stuff, you know, chop it all up. Because, I mean, somebody could play that part live, but we do it kind of through the computer, I guess you could say. We're sampling people that have played actual sounds, but we're just putting it together in our own configuration of beats in our own timing, and so that's kind of all it is. Very nerdy music stuff, you know. But,
listen, you don't get many credits on an album when you open them up for programming. So he's on Won't You Remember? Yes, exactly. So Won't You Remember My Name? And then the last tune we're going to play, as I'm saying goodbye to you, is Nevermind. We're going to talk about that, but he gets a credit on programming on that one. But then there's one other name, and it's only one name. There's a harmony vocal on track 7, which is The Good Times, and I only have one name to go with here. I'm going to say, you say you pronounce her name.
That's Prisca.
Prisca, yeah. All right.
And she only has one name, and that's her name, and that's how she's known. And she's an amazing soul singer from the Atlanta area. I met her through a producer that we've had before named Billy Hume, who helped us win a Grammy. The string dusters win a Grammy for one of our records. And he's known Prisca for a while, and she's been around Billy's scene down in Atlanta. And, she sang on my Circles record and just blew me away so much that I was like, well, I want to have her again on this track. And, so I just emailed her and I said, hey, I got another track for you to work on if you're interested. And she jumped at the chance, and of course she just nailed her part. So she's amazing.
Listen, you mentioned, I'm talking to Jeremy Garrett. If you're just tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass, we're going over a lot of things, not the least of which is his latest album, Wanderer's Compass. You mentioned that your next album, you talked about your next album, you're going to focus in more on bluegrass. Do you have something that's going to be in the next year or so coming out?
Yeah, I've got a record that's going to be fifth.
Okay.
And it's all bluegrass. It's as bluegrass as I can get, anyways. And, wrote all the songs on there, or co-wrote all the songs on there. I think I did one cover out on the whole record. It's all bluegrass, you know. It's original, but it's all bluegrass. And, I've got a bunch of people helping me, a lot of special guests on there on different instruments, and banjo for sure. There's a lot of banjo on the record, and I just kind of always have been in that music and just felt like I really needed to sort of go back that way. You know, it just kind of seemed perfect for timing of bluegrass. Everybody is sort of hip to it right now. They're interested in it, and they're kind of paying attention to what's going on in the bluegrass world. And for me, that's where my
chops
lie. And so I really wanted to kind of follow through with the project. And I've never really done that since maybe my very first record, I Am a Stranger, you know, where I kind of focused on the bluegrass stuff. But this is even more of an in-depth focus for me on bluegrass, I feel like. And, you know, I'm just trying to go all the way on this record.
You know, that to me, for people like you, Jeremy, who can do it and want to do it and feel moved to do it, I think there's this natural thing where there's kind of this entropy. There's expansion, and then you come back. And then you expand a little more, and you bring a little more back. So it's always movement. In other words, the Wanderer's Compass is a good example of that, but your target's always constantly moving because you're always hearing other things. So that makes sense to me that you're going to put out an album like that in 2022 in March. Is there a new String Dusters album that'll be dropping before then?
Yeah, there's going to be a brand new String Dusters dropping in February.
Okay.
Actually, and that record, we're so proud of that record too. I mean, that was one we really, you know, I don't know, we kind of got deeper on music than we've got in a long time, and especially on the songs, and you know, have a whole pandemic basically to sort of influence material you might be bringing to a record. So when we got together, we recorded that thing in Denver and did our usual String Duster treatment to it. But the songs are just kind of really powerful, you know, maybe more powerful than other records we've done in the past as far as a kind of a current and a message that's kind of going through the whole thing. And we're excited to share all that with everybody.
Well, I can't wait for that. And I want you to introduce Nevermind, we've talked about, but I also want to make sure everybody knows where they can find Wanderer's Compass. What kind of organicrecords.com or garrettgrass.com?
How organic records, you can go to fiddlescience.com.
Okay.
Is where you can order for any merch from me, and if you need an actual CD or whatever. And otherwise, you can stream it anywhere there's music streaming. You can go check it out.
Good. Now, we've talked about Nevermind and it relations to your programmer, Scott Barnett. But let's talk. Come back around, do a nice intro for Nevermind, which I'm crazy about this tune. You tell me who it is, and then we'll play that, and then I'll let you go.
Right on. Well, Nevermind is a Dennis Lloyd cover, actually, and he's an Israeli musician who's very popular overseas. He has had a mega hit with that particular song. It's a little more obscure over here in the States, but I guess I picked it up off of a BMW commercial, off of something I was watching one night, and they just kept playing this BMW commercial, and I heard this vibe on this song, and I was just kind of captivated, so I Googled him up and figured out who it was and kind of messed with it a little bit. Lo and behold, it turns out to be a perfect looping song. You know, a lot of times I look for songs that have a simple, repetitive chord progression for a loop because I want to be able to set those loops up fast when I'm performing, and this kind of fit that to a T. So once I started laying it down and I was able to bring all these other influences in, and, you know, using the looping is one thing, but also bringing in like these, you know, really kind of like high-end effects, you know, for fiddle and stuff, and creating some synthesizer-type tones and such. But I do that all with the fiddle, you know, and use effects to do that. So that's kind of a lot of what this song is about, is layering up these loops and then these effects to kind of create what it is that it actually becomes and to make the track happen.
Well, it's a great track. There's other songs we could cut about and play about, other cuts I could drop in. I'll drop those in throughout the program, but I didn't mean to skip over She's My Friend. I think that's a gorgeous, dedicated song, and Good Times. There's a lot of great tunes. There's 10 of them. They're all great, but we're going to end then with that introduction to Nevermind from Jeremy Garrett. Jeremy, I always welcome you back to the program whenever you have time. I know you're busy right now, and hopefully you're out there getting out and playing different venues. I think that's freed up a little bit.
Yeah, it's pretty much back to work, it seems like. Still a little iffy out there here and there for, you know, making sure that, I don't know, like some of the shows it's all coming back. You know?
Yeah,
it feels
like
the world is waking up, and hopefully the spring is just more direction headed that way.
I hope so.
All be back to normal or whatever that is.
Yeah, whatever that is. You're right, whatever that is. All right, man, let's play Nevermind from Wanderer's Compass. My guest has been Jeremy Garrett. Jeremy, I'll let you get back to your life, and we'll get out of here with Nevermind, and I'll talk to you again somewhere down the road.
Right on. Thanks so much for your time, Steve. This was a lot of fun.
Thanks, Jeremy.